Welcome to Whore and Hooch. Let me do a big round of introductions before we get started. Kay Bly of the Fifth Wall. We have Jay Astral over here from the Fifth Wall. We have Desiree from Tempered Drinks, my co-creator and starring actress from our upcoming anthology, LaTanya is here, and our special guest, which we are really excited to talk to and meet, this is Comica, or we're going to call her Micah, and she is here, so we are excited. We're going to have some fun today. We're going to be discussing Black women in the horror genre and filmmaking, but y'all know before we get started what we got to do first, Desiree.
I got to get you a drink. Okay. So in honor of our special guest, Miss Comica, I had a chance to look at a sneak peek of Bango. Love the sneak peek. But in honor of the wife, we are having giggle juice today. Oh. So this is a very simple recipe. It is actually made for group events. It's a punch, but you can break it down how you want to because it's even parts of everything. So if you want to make a big punch, it's going to be 2 cups. You want to start with your citrus vodka. Y'all, this is a organic citrus vodka. Y'all ain't got to get fancy like that. Absolute make a citrus vodka. Everybody make citrus vodka. But this is a Hanson Sonoma. And you also need some Moscato. This was for Miss Kima over here. You know she loves Moscato. Or you can use a Prosecco if you like Prosecco. Lemon lime soda. Y'all know I like Sprite. Mm-hmm. And a pink lemonade, which I got my pink lemonade poured up here. So if it's a big punch, it's 2 cups of everything. Put it together, mix it up, and you are going to garnish that with strawberries and limes. I mean, lemons, not limes. I already have mine in my glass here, if y'all can see that. So I'm just going to mix mine. Start with your pink lemonade.
Now, when you said garnish, I thought you meant put it on the side and not on the inside.
On the side, inside, however you all like it.
Yeah, everywhere. I want all of it.
I just set mine on the side.
Wherever you want
to
it
get
to go.
Something for my coffee. I'll be right back.
Okay. Sounds good to me. While she do that, I'm going to finish this off with my lemon lime. And then you just give it a good stir. If you're doing an individual one, put a little bit more of what you like. Stir it really good. Y'all know I don't like no ice, but if you need ice, put your ice in there.
So you and, ain't say that beforehand. I ain't put none in mine. It's just
ain't no ice in there. It's
just giggle juice.
Ain't no ice in there. It's just giggle juice.
It's just giggle.
And it's good. I love giggle.
Oh, this big old horse.
My coffee is a friend now.
Yes.
Oh, yes. That's a I good friend. It. Good job. My coffee was lonely. So it's the Lord's Day and we must celebrate it by drinking alcohol and coffee in our bathrobes because Jesus.
And then that's how that goes.
Yep.
And that's I try to be a little bit professional where I pair, you know, a little paraphernalia, but I wish I could put on my bathrobe. That'd be nice.
I am wearing my bathrobe, and I will continue to do so. I'm a writer. This is all we wear. It's just me in the backyard in my bathrobe petting a cat. That's my whole glamorous life. It's bathrobes and cats, and bathrobes.
It's part of the attire.
Whatever works.
I'm bringing the Hugh Hefner back.
Yes.
But not
and Hugh Hefner wore a robe, honey. He could wear a robe.
You got some slippers with your initials on it with the little fluffies and furry.
No, but thank you for a good idea, though. Why do I not have that? Hello? What
a, it goes.
What am I waiting for?
That'll mean it'll be all official. That's all you need. Mm-hmm. It'll be official. So, Miss, I want to say we are very honored for you to come in today and speak with us. And I'm going to go ahead and start off with a big question that's been on the back of my mind after viewing your craft and your beautiful work that you've put together, especially being Black women in horror. What was some obstacles or an obstacle that you would often face when trying to enter into film festivals? And would you look for more diverse film festivals or those that's just center in on our community?
Honestly, what I found was the most effective thing to do was every time I found a fest that I thought like, hey, this kind of lines up with what I've created. You're always trying to find a fest that fits what you've created, not trying to get your thing into a thing. You know, one of these things are not like the other. You want it to match up. I also found it was really helpful to find who puts this fest on, look at their social media, friend them if they're available, because then you can see what they're involved in and you can kind of see like, this is the programming that they're into. And you look at your stuff and go, does this match up? If not, keep them as a contact. They're another cool horror person. But I was looking specifically for where does this fit? And I found that I spent more time, because people are always like, your stuff always gets in. It's like, yeah, because I don't apply everywhere. You know, they're like, you have like 100, almost like at one point I had like 100% of submission rate. Now that's gone down because, you know, I took a few chances. And also, just because a fest lines up with your programming doesn't mean they have room for it that year, you know? Mm. So you have to be an understanding. So I found that getting a real sense of the person whose fest it is or the group of people. And there's some fests that I can tell like, nah, you don't want to hear this. And the other ones I'm like, yeah, you're gonna be into this. And so you can kind of tell, like when I go to look at someone's social media and let's say they're pro our current fascist administration, I know, don't submit to that film festival. Okay. You are not getting in. Right. And you don't want to get in. Right. You don't want to get in there. You don't want, you don't need those friends.
Yes.
So okay. That's kind of how I was able to do it. So it's that I might look at 100 fests. I'm probably going to only submit to 2 or 3. Then everyone's like, wow, you got into all of them. I'm like, yeah, because I looked at them. I communicated. I see how big they are. Ooh, does it look like from last year this would fit in there? And just never take it personally. Never. Just never. Even if it is, don't take it personally because it won't end well. And to be honest, half of the time, it really isn't. It's just that fests only have so much room. Yeah.
Good advice.
Thank you, Dad. You answered my original question and my next question, which was any advice for those that are first-time filmmakers entering in a fest? Mm-hmm. And you answered that. I appreciate you letting us know, like, don't just enter in all of them, you know, study it, research those individuals, research their calls and what they're trying to, you know, put out to make sure that matches, if that's really who you want to align with, because at the end of the day, you're making a connection with that person, you're building up your network as well. So you answered both of my questions, and I really appreciate that. That's something I'm going to put in my book, like, yeah, I can research 100, but only sign up for 2 or 3.
Put that in the notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love there that. You go. So awesome. I also had a question or two. mm-hmm. I'm gonna start with my standard question because I am the bartender of the group. I know I saw some Kahlua go in that coffee, but what is your preferred drink of choice?
I would have to say I'm a whiskey girl, so I love a good Manhattan. As I have always said, I'm on the quest for the perfect Manhattan.
Oh, that's a long quest.
I kind of feel like right, it's gonna take a lifetime. It is. I'm gonna like, and I gotta work on it more. I've been sober way too much this year. I'm going to fix that. It's not helping. But I love a good whiskey. I'm a fan. I just Four Roses just went on sale, which is like a kind of a mid-level type whiskey, perfect. Right? Yeah. But so serviceable. So I got a couple bottles of that. But I'm always open to like a new, smoother, more wonderful whiskey. I'm always open for suggestions.
Love it. I love it. I don't have any new suggestions right now, but Four Roses is a good one that I can, like you say, get it at home and not be mad about my pockets.
Yeah, it's like, it's reasonable and it has really fine notes. Like you don't have to chill it. It's one of those ones, like it isn't as good as like a fancy sipping whiskey, but almost like you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, straight and nice and neat.
Yeah.
Now I'll go back to the questions at hand. Of course, we're talking about the horror genre, and I'm one of those people who have loved horror since being a child. Growing up, I watched everything I could, and my grandma was like, "Oh my God, that's so morbid. That's horrible." And that's, you know, that's a thing in the Black community, and in other communities as well, religion and different aspects of life. So is that something that you faced? Did you enjoy horror growing up? Did you have those stereotypical people who were like, "Oh my gosh, stop watching that. That's horrible.
That's the devil coming. Don't turn that on there. They're gonna come through the TV. That's the devil. You can't go trick-or-treating and oh, that's the devil's Christmas, Halloween. You can't celebrate Halloween and you know all the stereotypes as horror fans get as Black people.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in San Francisco, so I've been trick-or-treating since I was like, I basically came out with a poof of tinsels and wearing a mask. So there you go. Also, I think just having a multicultural experience, my life in the Bay Area is very different because my mother's white and my father's Black. So I have a blended family. So being raised with her, and she's the one who's the historian of the Americas. She's out on the front lines marching. She's one of these people that's kind of an iconoclast. So it would have never occurred to her to tell me to not create. That would have never happened. And as far as my dad's side, people that I got along with, because again, I'm a weirdo, we're weirdos too. We're fucking weirdos too. So my first boyfriend, also fellow blurred, he'd had the fangs. We're my very first boyfriend ever. We're still friends because he and his family are awesome. His wife, who they've been together for like 20 years, is awesome. We're all a bunch of blurreds, all dressing up and sending each other cosplay pictures. So that's the community that always accepted me, was other Black nerds. Like that was where I always had friends because I was a weirdo. So that's where I was accepted. So I think because I circumnavigated all the church stuff, I just never had friends that were, you know, like I grew up with a plethora of options. My mom says she's a born again Celt. I'm basically a hoodoo adjacent. Like we got a lot of stuff going on. So this idea that Jesus was coming to get you or coming to hurt you or mad at you, I just had no consciousness of that. So my creativity was just based on one, being young enough to where I didn't have a sexual identity. So when I would watch The Twilight Zone and there was Rod Serling in his suit talking about weird things, I was like, oh my God, I want to do that. Like, I was like, I almost am. So I think that a lot of things kind of set in before a lot of the you're not allowed to's started coming in.
And you were already in your own DNA.
I already had like weirdo blurred friends, so I never felt that we were weird. We all watched horror movies. I never thought that that was weird or odd or different or a thing Black people didn't do, because we were doing that. And we were a mixed group. I wasn't the only person that had a parent who wasn't Black, but we were all just a bunch of brown and Black kids that liked horror and weirdness and dressed up. Anthony and his wife still dressing up. It's fucking awesome. They just sent a picture yesterday. They're elves. They are the hottest Black elves you will ever. Love them.
Oh, do they have the ears?
So
you probably, girl, you know.
Yes, they do the whole thing. They're so cool. Oh my God, they're the best. when I say that this is the best couple ever, oh my God, they are so fun. So yeah, so I think that my experience is different and odd and weird. I grew up in the Bay Area. We had a very different type of life. So I never felt cut off or singled out or weird.
Right. And see, I'm in the South, so it's totally different.
We're all in the South. I didn't get
that, that nice group of friends.
And I am also biracial. I'm Native American. My dad's Black, my mom's the Native. And to be honest, I was more accepted on my mom's side when it came to my nerd side and being into horror compared to on my dad's side. And I'm like the rest of the girls, we're all from the South, and it would kind of be like you're weird. I don't mind being weird. I mean, I love being unique. It didn't bother me.
Right?
It was just a stigma. And being like the only one. So when I ran into Kay Bly, even though I knew her from the small town that we're from, but when I ran into her in college, it was kind of like, oh, well, we could be the weirdo sisters. Like, it was
Together.
Awesome. Together. So, it was kind of like a good thing that me and her, like, coming from the same town and running into each other in college as well, kind of, you know, we kind of created our own little comfort zone that grew. Mm-hmm. We met others along the way.
Nice. Yeah, coming from the south, you kind of have to find your tribe of horror people, because it's like, for a while you'll be like, am I the only, like,
no, I ain't crazy, like,
you know,
maybe like, a little
I
could,
yeah,
yes, I could only talk about horror movies with like my white friends, because my black friends would not watch them. They would tell me, that is too scary, I'm not watching it. Or no, why would you read that book? Yeah. It's too scary. And the only other people that were like really, really watching it was like all my white friends. So like they were the only ones I could talk to horror stuff about, until you like literally like that. You really got to find your tribe in the South of horror people. It's like you really got to find these people. But I love this horror community. I love the Black horror community. Because like once you find it, it's like we all have that thing in common. It's just like we know that we're a bit different from everybody else. And even a bit different from like the white horror community. It's just like we're kind of like in a strange little group ourselves, you know?
But it all mingles together. Horror is horror at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, it is now.
It really is.
It is. It's just some things that we might consider scary might not be considered scary amongst, you know, everybody has their different spectrum. I'm just excited to see more people being interested, more people like dropping that stigma. I also appreciate you giving us a whole different aspect, because we were just familiar with what we were seeing here in the South, you know? And that just lets us know, like, hey, hopefully that continue to spread over this way.
Right.
Right. Which brings me to a question, like, what has been your experience so far with filmmaking in this, this genre?
Well, because I've just done like a few different indie things and helped other people with like cool indie projects. I would say that overall, the most important thing, especially for a writer, is if you're not a director, you need to find your people who are directors, like a director that picks up your script and goes, oh, I must make this. My experience first was kind of working with a lot of people that were like good at comedy, good at drama, and they would look at it and go, oh, I guess I can fix this, you know, like make it more normal, make it less supernatural, make it, yeah. And I'm like, no. So I had my first bad experiences working with them that were like, well, I'll make it more supernatural because, you know, horror is trashy. And I'm like, why is it that the horror genre gets judged by its lowest grade stuff, but the drama genre doesn't get judged by the last crappy movie that someone saw in Lifetime? Because that's drama too. Mm-hmm. I Had My Stepson's Baby on Lifetime is drama, not just Sophie's Choice, people. So like, they'll judge us by the lowest common denominator ever and go, that's horror. I'm like, really? Is it? Is it? Or is it a vast genre that you don't really understand, because it's going to involve a lot more reading and theory and you're not up for it? Oh, the second one, right. So that was my experience, is getting through dealing with people that thought they were helping me by changing stuff. When I first did the limited web series, The Gray Area, the person that shot the first episode wanted to make it into a drama, and I got their edit back and I was like, wow, this is not even usable. So I had to literally go back, get someone who's my friend, Torian Allen, lovely director, just a kind of director I was talking about. He looks at my creepy horror shit and goes, wow, this is creepy. Let's do some creepy shit. Also a Black director, wonderful family man, great dad, awesome friend. And I never have to justify where I'm coming from. You know, like we have a creepy micro short that we'll put out in a week or so. It's like 2 minutes long. And we're having so much fun. And there's stuff that we had to fix, because again, I had someone who wasn't a horror person trying to help. And as we fixed all of the problems, we actually became even better and better creative friends. Meaning that we were able to expand each other's language. So I better know how to talk to directors. He better knows how to talk to writers. And it isn't that we always agree. It's that we're always striving for the middle ground because I trust his talent. He trusts my talent.
I have a question to follow that. Yes. So what made you want to create instead of just continue to wait for the audition?
Well, because I'm not really an actor. Like, I will act in stuff that I write because I have control over me. And because I have training as an actor, I have training as a Shakespearean actor. I was an acting coach. My lifestyle doesn't really fit that of an actor. I am more of a writer. Even when I got a job on a set, I was always looking at other stuff and going like, oh, I can't fix that. Ah, I can't fix that. I wasn't happy just being like, it wasn't my path, but I'm glad that I studied it and that I have a love and affection and respect for it because it very much informs how I write characters. I'm always looking for making sure that I'm providing safe experiences for actors. I'm always writing in very specifics. If I want to make sure that certain actors get a shot at the roles, I will be very specific in this is a dark-skinned character and the things around this character relate to her being dark-skinned. You can't cast Zendaya in this. As much as I love her, this isn't her story. So I found that as an actor that if you kind of create it all through the role, they can only call in someone that fits the role. So I found that's effective because I understand that casting is a process. It's difficult. So I do think that I'm very grateful for my time acting and that it informed me as to what actors' lives are, what actresses face. I'm always very careful when I'm creating anything where someone has to be naked or unclothed. There's always a way to write it that gives the ability to keep things safe. And that's what I'm always looking for, because a safe actor is an engaged actor, is a wonderful actor, is an actor working at the top of their game, because they don't have to be like, whoa, what's that? They're just getting in on their job. And that's what we want, is that juicy, good creativeness. So I think that my time as an actor did help me and did kind of help me see how racist and filled with colorism casting is, because if I hadn't experienced it, I wouldn't have understood it. And I did notice that there are very common patterns when they call for a Black couple. They are usually looking, or a mixed couple, what they'll get is a biracial kid, me, and a dark-skinned Black man. That's not,
I was the only person that saw that,
kid that looked like that.
Yeah, they do that
because I was an actor in this, and I was like, wait, so no. And then the kid's mom comes to pick her up, white mom, Black dad. I'm like, yeah, I don't get that with this pairing, people. Hello. And well, why are they doing it when it's unnatural colorism? That's why. So being able to see that and kind of look and go like, why is this the same thing? Why am I getting called in for this part every time? And it provides a very skewed vision that's not real. I think as audiences, we kind of reject it because we feel it isn't real. It takes us out of it because we can see that it's not real. It's not life. And if you're going to write some supernatural shit, some shit that requires you to just suspend your fucking belief, the more you can ground it in reality, because then when you take that away and you're stuck in this world, so exciting. So I don't know. I think that's where casting can go in the future, away from this colorist kind of dialogue and into a more realistic and exciting one. And we'll have more full, more exciting, better stories.
I agree.
Better. Straight to that. Better stories.
Yes.
I agree with everything.
Me and Latanya were actually just talking about that the other day. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that if you see it as an actor, seeing the breakdown going on the audition, it's different than seeing it once it's a produced thing. And you're like, wait, what's the problem? They're all black. It's like, yeah, but look at how the collage has come together in the same exact way every time. That should be weird for everyone.
It is.
Because it is.
Me,
it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. And it's unnecessary because there's so many great actors and actresses that can do these roles. So there's no shortage mm-hmm. of talent. So there's no right. excuse. Mm-hmm.
What was like maybe that spark that made you go from little and liking horror movies and loving Halloween and everything spooky to saying mm-hmm. I want to do that, like mm-hmm. I can make this, like what was the mm-hmm. thing that said, you know what, I can do this?
Yeah, I think it's that I've always had amazing mentors, and I was able mm-hmm. to work with Rodessa Jones went as a young woman in theater, coming up. That was my first job, was getting to be on stage with her. And she's always been a mentor to me. What?
Oh, I'm saying that's an amazing first job.
My first job was Blockbuster. I didn't even have a speaking anything. I was a lonely little person, but I worked my way up and got to meet and work with amazing people. I got to be directed by Coleman Domingo in like my second play ever.
Wow.
And he was awesome to me and very much encouraged me. So people like Ardessa, people like Coleman always said, you got this, kid, you can do it.
Oh, and he's right. He's still alive on Fear the Walking Dead, by the way. And they've been killing people left and right.
I know.
Yes, Strand is still alive.
So just awesome people like that. Yeah, like, right? Like, that's how. So it really is them. It's people like that that encouraged me and said, yeah, mm-hmm. don't stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, that's good to have those good mentors and stuff around. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, like, I don't know how we get there without mentors and without people mm-hmm. looking at our work and encouraging us where we mm-hmm. are great. You know, like that's important, because it's real scary to turn that first couple, those first couple scripts, or you're real nervous.
Mm-hmm. I can say that.
You know, you're still lurchy. And then after that, the next couple years, like as you start selling work, as you start getting hired to help other people do things, you really start seeing where you are great. Mm-hmm. You know, you just start get a sense of this is the pith of where my talent is and where the stories that I need to tell are.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And I think that with that comes a responsibility. So I usually try to, like, you know, if you host writing groups or et cetera, and you see someone starting and you can see that they have talent, but they're struggling with formatting or they're struggling with this, help them out. Say, hey, this helped me. How about this? That's, you just like commend what they're doing right. And if there's a thing that you can give them that will help where they're struggling, do that. You know, mm-hmm. like that's what I learned from Coleman and Greg Rodessa, is never stop doing that. Because it's great to have mentors that are older than you. But the truth is, most of us as artists have accepted that we also need mentors that are younger than us, that know things that we won't know, that are in their teens coming up, want to make their first movie, and they might have thought of something that I never thought of that way. Awesome. Mm-hmm. That person is then now mentoring me. Yes.
and we need a lot more of that.
You know, it's that,
yeah,
that it goes like, it goes around there, that, you know, that there's artists that I've met that were like 11, 12 years old and they're writing their first thing, and they're writing like prose, like it's poetry, and it's effortless. Like, wow, look at what you're up to. Mm-hmm. You know, like those are mentors too.
That's beautiful.
We definitely need more of that mentorship in the community and in general, because mm-hmm. you know, out here it's like dog eat dog, or is the analogy they always give, the crab in the barrel analogy. Yeah. Everybody wants to pull everybody else down. Nobody wants to help one another. But definitely if we're helping each other, like you're saying, with the mentorship in all levels, it's easier and it's better for everybody. And, you know, you get on, I get on, we get on, everybody working. So yeah. I love that.
Yes.
We need artwork. We need, if the pandemic taught us anything, mm-hmm. it's that mm-hmm. when we're shut in, when we're alone, we turn to artists and we turn to art. So there is enough room for everybody. There is enough, make it. There's enough room for it. Why? because we all need stuff to stream. We'll run out of our stuff after a while. So we always want to, like, how can I help you get your cool thing done? Now, that doesn't mean I'm open to helping everyone do everything, but that if there's a way where I can help a cool person get a cool thing done, oh yeah, I'm trying to help that happen.
Yeah.
When creating, how do you draw that line? Because I know, I feel like we're starting to understand the importance of everybody on the team understanding the vision. And just like, you know, your mom say, once I'm done right, you got to do it yourself. Like, how do you make sure that that comes across versus you just trying to do everything because you know you're going to do it right?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's, the answer is kind of the same one as how I found Torian, is that let's say you have a costume designer and you can feel that they're shaky. You can feel that they're scared. You can feel that they're not quite handling it. Instead of getting mad at them after they've already messed up, you need to be like, hey, no, really, because then things are already started. Is that as soon as you feel that weakness, that sense of private conversations, and really check in with, where are they? Are they trying to do something so out of their comfort zone because they think they can, but now they're scared? Or are they in their comfort zone? They can do it. They just need encouragement, because those are two different states.
Yeah.
And if that person is out of their, they're in over their head, they either need to be replaced or have help. But as soon as you know this person is over their head, if you're mad at them that they can't deliver, either give them something that they can do, or it, this might not be the project for them yet. And that it's not about rejecting anyone, is that you can't be a teacher to everyone all the time. If I need a small, strong team, and this person's wobbly, we need to have private conversations. No one's mad at them or judging their humanity, because one, I'm not a therapist, so I can't help with any life problems. But if this is in your wheelhouse and you can knock it out and you need some encouragement, I'm here for you. I will also replace you in a moment if this is not your job. So I'm that person too. So it, and just because I replaced you on something that you weren't ready for, as long as you handle it well and you grow, guess what? More shit's happening next year.
I love
it. So like it's about how they handle it. And I was on sets where I saw it handled differently, where everyone's complaining about the person, complaining about it, little digs about them. That's not helping. And they don't really deliver. And then there's kind of this weird, it's like, no, don't do that. As soon as it's not on for them, as soon as they can't fucking handle it, you need to get someone in. Because if you're trying to put out all the fires and do everyone else's job, you can't do your job.
Yeah.
So if I trust you, I know I can leave you alone to do your job. And when I get back, it'll be done to an excellence that expresses your art artistry. You'll be calm, cool, and collected, and the shit will be on fire. If I can't trust that, then having you on set isn't helping me. That's just creating more things for me to fix later, and I already have enough things. So that's, and I found that like people have sometimes a hard time with that, where I've been told I'm
Meeting
your Tetra, and it's like, no, I'm not. And it isn't personal, and that's okay. Because here's the thing. You feel a certain way when you don't get a job, and that's okay. And you feel a certain way when you get let go, that's okay. So anyone that said anything mean or bad about me because I let you go, blah, 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 after time, you probably will realize why. And then if you're sorry about it, and you know, you didn't act too crazy, then maybe it's on again, you know. But I definitely, like, as soon as you're not right for a thing, like you're really not right for it, I'm not helping you by hiring you for it, because this is all indie stuff, you know. It's not like anyone's getting rich. So how is that helping you? You know, like that's who no one wants to be like, here's my portfolio and it's all basic fucking average shit. That's not helping you. You want, this is my portfolio. People are like, damn, you're amazing. That gets you hired.
Gotta know your lane.
You. Yeah, so I'm not helping you, you know, by hiring you for a thing that you might not be right for. And that's another thing is that, like, mm-hmm. as an artist, you can feel like, oh, I didn't get it. I suck. It's like, no, 1,000 people can try out for that part. They can only hire one person. That doesn't mean 999 of you suck. That doesn't mean that at all.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I just, I don't know. I hope whenever I can to get artists out of thinking that way, that anytime they're not hired, that it's somehow a critique of their work. It's like, no, there's only one position. 1,000 of you try out. That doesn't mean you all suck just because you couldn't do the one thing.
Yeah.
There's a niche for everybody.
Artists are really hard on ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes we just need more training, you know, that's okay. I get training constantly. I just like, that's a thing as a writer that doesn't end. I just got another mm-hmm. book about different formatting because things change mm-hmm. the way things were formatted script wise when I was in school 200 years ago. I mean, not that long ago, is different than how things are formatted now. It's different than the way they were formatted last year. Like, you have to keep learning things. Like, it's okay to not know stuff, but you got to go learn that stuff.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Yeah, that's my soapbox on that.
That was helpful. You have no idea how much that helped us. Okay.
Oh, good. Awesome.
You have no idea, but that really. That was something that we are going to definitely take heed in, because, you know, like I said, we are coming up in this. So this type of information to get it from an experienced person, this is valuable. So thank mm-hmm. you for that. Like, that's, we're going to, you know, take that and use that, like, okay, from somebody who said that, like, now we got somebody that kind of told us what we needed to hear to proceed with that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
you, all right, you don't feel bad. You don't feel bad also when you find those people that you have to tell this ain't your ministry, because mm-hmm. we know that that's how it's done and that's how you get it done. And so now we know, okay, she's in the game. She knows how this works. So if we have to tell somebody mm-hmm. this ain't your lane, it's not us being horrible. Yeah. Is making sure that everything comes together. So yeah, it's good to hear that from somebody experienced.
Yeah, and it's also not good to put people, even if they want to be there, in positions they can't handle yet.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they might not agree with you at the time, and then years later, they'll be like, thanks for not giving me that part, I would have fucked it up. It's like, yeah, I know. That's why I didn't know.
Thanks.
Yeah, so don't you feel bad. Do it as nicely as possible, but nice, sweet, firm. And it's just, this isn't your turn. You know, like, let's keep you in mind. Mm-hmm. And then next time when this fits you, awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, and it's okay if someone's mad and is mad at you for a while. That's sometimes part of their growth. And like I said, I have had more than one person come back to me years later, like literally a year and a half, almost 2 years later, and kind of like, yeah, I was mad for a while, but you were right. I wouldn't have been able to do that. I'm like, yeah, I know. But they can now. So that's why they were able to see it, was that they were like, oh, right. Yeah, that would have been a nightmare. I was like, right, I know. That would have been insane.
Yes.
So
how much time should you give yourself when creating to figure out if everybody is a good fit? Like, how much time do you usually take? Like a week, 2 weeks,
well,
a month, year? How long does it take?
I can usually tell with a director, as soon as they read the script, their first reactions. Mm. If their first reaction is, are you open to changes? Not that mm-mm. person. Because what that means is they didn't understand it, so mm-hmm. they're trying to fix it. Mm. So mm-hmm. what I'm looking for from a director is different than a thing I might be looking for from an editor, from a costume designer. I would say in the mm-hmm. first interview, I know if they're going to work out or not. And I can tell by how they treat me, how respectful or disrespectful they are. I have also, just like with the film festivals, I have looked at their previous work, because mm-hmm. I'm trying to line up things that work. So if I was on the fence and there's any weirdness or attitude, no. So I would say, and I did have something that happened a few years ago when I was newer, where we had our first production meeting, and this guy that ended up being a problem, he kind of was like, had an attitude of, well, I'm here to bring it, to give it a professional feel, because yeah, he had worked in Hollywood, et cetera, but it was all always like, he's like, well, I'm from New York and this. And it always had this kind of like slightly combative attitude, like not too much, but just enough to where I wasn't fond of it, you know, not a fan. It wasn't mean in general, but it was just enough attitude. So he ended up being off for the project, but it got really testy and ugly. And I realized that if you get to the first production meeting where it's either, I don't care if it's a Zoom meeting, whatever it is, where it's all hands on deck, and there's any degree of attitude problems, not working, to go right to where that sound is. It's like, you know how, like when there's kids and you can see that one of them is kind of blitzing or bullying the other ones, how you have to stay right by that kid, because that kid is the one that's starting the issues, you know, because, you know, sometimes they're going through stuff, whatever it is, but that's, you are right by them. This is the kind of behavior a certain person does.
Mm-hmm.
They can be in any race, any gender, but look out for that person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right? Like, it's just, that's a problem person. They are what I call creating problems.
Mm.
So yeah. There's times to forgive people, times not to. If they're really sorry, they are never going to pull that shit again ever. And they do good work and they respect you. That person is worth forgiving, not forgetting, right. But you forgive, you work again. If it happens again, then that's it. But people make mistakes, as long as they're not rapey or horribly psycho racist, or, you know, like there's some things that doesn't matter what anyone says, like once they do certain shit, that's it. But as long as they're not lecherous, rapey, creepy, violent, racist, as long as it's just a misunderstanding, a mistake, and not really getting it, those are things you can have dialogue about. I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my long soapbox about dealing with difficult people.
And we just soaking it in, because this is so great.
Yes, we are absorbing that in, because I mean, like, say by said, first getting up and started, these are things that we need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we'll feel it, you know, you'll feel that tension in the room. It's like just knowing, like, hey, this
trust
is your
that.
Trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, trust your intuition and go ahead and nip it at the bud. So
instantly, you know, yes.
That gives us that security, and also knowing, like, hey, they get mad, they'll be all right. They'll be all right.
And what's great about that is that your actors will see you do that, and then they know if someone is creepy to them, someone touches them inappropriately, they know that they can go, hey, that happened, and that you won't play it down. Mm. Do you know, like, that's also how you create a safe set, that everyone gets like, hey.
Right.
And creepy people that want to be creepy will avoid you because they see
know
that
them.
You don't help.
Yes,
that's it. And then it's even safer on set. And when actors know that they are safe, taken care of and respected, they will give you some acting you are just like, wow. Because that's, actors live to do these parts. They love it. And when they feel respected and they feel they're in a safe environment, they will start pushing their own boundaries. They're like, no, I need to take my shirt off for this one. You're like, no, no, no. I'm like, no, I'm fine.
They get in that zone.
they do. And it's so great to watch actors in the zone. That's still just, that's a fun part about being on set. Like, normally I'm just a writer and I'm not on set that much anymore. But it's always great to just see people that love acting, just getting their groove on. You can see when they're inspired and the director's happening, they're moving, they're getting, and it's like, that's when the director really gets to have their vision really, really realized, because they don't have to, is this actor okay? Am I, no, they're, you know, off in a swimming universe. And it's just like, it's wonderful to watch.
It is.
Really.
I agree. I actually had a really great time watching the actors and Tanya and the rest of them. They did amazing. I can't wait for you guys to see it. But I personally enjoyed, yes, like being behind the scenes and like watching her work, like us on the opposite ends of it, like her in front of the camera doing her job, and then me on the other side of the camera doing our job. Like that was a, it was an amazing experience, and it kind of like confirmed for us, like, like we're in the right place, like we're on the right path of like, we know this is something we wanted to do. It's hard work, but it's that stress that you like though.
Yeah, and that's that motivating stress. I will say that anytime you're shooting, always make sure that you delegated one person on your team to document the shoot. Just to get behind the scenes stuff. Anytime you're giving direction, anytime, like not when they're shooting, but just, you know, just anytime, so that that first person knows to take a million pictures. Because if you want to get 10 really good behind the scenes shots, you got to take about 100. So every day have one person that's just doing that. Then by the time you're done, let's say you want to have an Indiegogo and raise $1,000. Now you have like a whole bunch of really cool behind the scenes pictures. Take it when you have lunch breaks, take it like, because it really lets people see what you have. And then if you, if you want to build a website for a project, you have cool but behind the scenes shots of the director working, the actors, you know, like. Yeah. As a fan of a show or a film, aren't those always fun to see? I love seeing those. So always take them, because it not only humanizes your project, it lets other people see Black creators creating. People love to see it.
Yeah. And I have to say, from being on the
set, about all our favorite shows, we love that.
I agree with being on the set with you guys. I'm not the creative. I'm not the writer. I'm not the actor. I'm the drinker. I'm the bartender. And then I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the horror genre. So that's why I fit in here. But I was there for you guys, you know, filming, and to hear the directors and to hear LaTanya and to hear Kima say, hey, let's do it this way, do it that way. And they worked so well, and they took the direction. There was no hostility. It was like, hey, let's go for this and not that. And they just meshed. And so I agree. I can see where that would definitely help the actors, the writer, and everybody on the, you know, the set, if you got that person documenting, because just sitting in the green room listening, I was like, oh, this is great. Okay. They finna do this one again? Dog, okay.
Well, and also actors always need more and more pictures. They always need to show their agents that they're doing stuff. And so by taking that, then there's things that they have for their website. For their, it's like another little gift that you can give your performers, because they always need those.
Yeah.
You know, so... and they're also great because if you want to submit for a grant or anything like that, just having a bunch of documented work, it just, it really, really helps. And there's actually a lot of grants for smaller productions that are like around $500 to $1,000. So I would definitely encourage you guys to look at grants. If you consider doing like any kind of Indiegogo stuff, I found that the people that are most successful are usually raising like $1,000 or less, and to have plenty of behind the scenes pictures, and just let everyone see the awesomeness of what you're doing. If it's not invasive, just take little video clips, like, you know, like just when it's not invasive to the process. And if you're not on camera, you're on picture duty. You can literally never have too many. You really can't.
Yes,
ever.
Before I start deleting some of these, because I took a lot. So I'm like, I'm glad you said that before I start deleting them.
No.
Well, because out of like a few pictures, you might only get like a few good ones, but the good ones are so good. They really are. So like, let's say you have 100 and half of them are out of focus, and one, this is only a part of someone's elbow, and this, and you go through and you go through, but that one or two that's fucking awesome, that's your cover shot right there. So that's that gold that's worth digging for. So take a million pictures. You're only going to use a few, but they'll be fucking awesome. And yeah, it's tedious to go through them, but it's so cool when you find one. Yeah. Love that.
Yes, that is good information. Awesome. And thank you so much for all of this. You've been You've been so helpful. This is a wonderful learning experience, I would like to say. This is
wonderful. If there's anything that I've learned in my weird indie life that can help other creatives doing other cool horror stuff, I will tell you. If I don't have the answer, I might know someone who does. But yeah, you can always ask me stuff, as again, I might not know, but I might know someone who does, because I have friends in all different kind of parts of the creative worlds. And yeah, it's never wrong to ask stuff you don't know.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And anyone that makes you feel weird about asking stuff you don't know, fuck them.
Yes, I love it. You know, Kelly Jo Mentor said pretty much the same thing.
She sure did. In so many words.
I'm like, see, now I'm being able to be able to separate the really cool people from the ones that are like just crappy. Because I'm like, y'all on the same page. Mm-hmm. Just I'm like, that's good advice there.
It is.
Yeah. Well, we all need mentors. Yeah.
And I'm actually excited to see the rest of the Hinterland Zoo anthology you have coming. Like I was in it. And I'm like, when you were like describing how the rest of the episodes will play and how they're all kind of like intertwined in each other. I'm like, I'm ready to watch that. This is interesting.
The first three moments blew my mind. I was like, wait a minute. What just happened? I watched it twice back to back because I was like, wait. Like, one, she fooled them. Two, what's going to happen next? I need the rest. So I'm ready.
And then the wolf mask. And I was like,
that's what got me.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So I'm excited for that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one that I'll be pitching the next month or so. And we'll see. I definitely wrote it to be cost effective in shooting. Like each episode only has like three or four people in it. It's a thing you could easily shoot during the pandemic, but we'll see. Cause I'm trying to sell like the concept. So I have a few other things that'll kind of see if they sell, see what happens. A few different things I'll probably be helping out with, but mostly I'm just a weirdo writer in my bathrobe in the backyard with a cat.
Hey,
that was the best kind.
it meshes well. It goes with the whole, makeup. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I mean, people wish they could have that whole like uniqueness that weirdos have. They have to fake it.
It's a lot of people these days that really trying to fake they nerd them, and it's just strange.
It wasn't cool when we was young, so I'm like, okay.
Why is this a thing now? Like, no, I like when like people try to gatekeep and like decide who gets to be a nerd or not. It's like, motherfucker, I saw Star Wars in the theaters as a child, okay? You don't even know who you are talking to. I am an old nerd, all right? Like, get the fuck out of here with that shit.
Just because you know one of the actors' daughters' middle names, and now you just the expert.
Yeah.
Listen, I hate when it's like, do you even know what that is on your shirt? Or do you even, have you watched so-and-so? It's like, why would I be wearing this otherwise? Or why would I be talking about it? Or, come on.
Well, I usually respond very, very seriously. I say, no, a strange man broke in and dressed me this morning. How's your day going?
That's what you
should start
using.
Yeah.
I like that response.
Let's get weird.
I like that response.
Yeah. It's like, you get people to step away from you gently. That's what I'm looking for. Like, yeah, maybe you don't talk to me again. How about that?
Right. When they walk away, they're gonna walk with their face to you. They're not gonna turn their back because they don't know what's coming next. Like, they just gonna back away slowly.
It's funny. Back away like Homer Simpson disappearing into a shrubbery. That's what I'm looking for.
That's one of my favorite memes.
I need to write that down because y'all be arguing with two people in these nerd groups.
Don't even waste the energy on that. Because I can't
argue with them, girl. No. That's the wrong type of energy.
That's fine. No, I'm gonna just say something weird, and that's gonna be it.
Yeah,
there's
this ending, and, right? And let them fight about it. That's right. The best part.
They be trying to figure it out.
Love it.
Yeah. Where are you guys in your production?
Like, we're how post production now.
You have your nice, mm-hmm. nice. When do you feel you will have your first content?
Hopefully by the end of the year is what we're hoping, because we shot a lot of footage in the episode. It's a bit lengthy. I kind of write a lot. We have our Fifth Wall YouTube channel. We did a Seed and Spark campaign a couple years ago, so we still have our account with them, so that we can upload it there, and Amazon, of course. That I've actually been looking at.
Thing I found with dealing with Amazon is the day that you drop it, be sure that you have at least 10 to 15 people that are willing to watch and rate it. Because people won't watch or rate a thing that has no ratings, especially if it's new and doesn't have famous people. So all of you, since there's like, you know, there's enough of you to where you can each get 5 good friends, family members that have Amazon. They have to click on it. They have to watch it and then write a review. Now, they don't have to pretend it's perfect. It's actually better if they write what they really think. Like, literally say, don't just give us 5 stars and say, this is good, because the algorithm will be able to tell that it's not real.
Wow.
Tell them, give it the stars you think it deserves. Give it the rating you think it deserves, as if you didn't know me. Now, that can be scary. But I found that when you say that to people, they are far more likely to actually, because then they get, oh, you don't need me to just be a robot. You want to know what I think, because get this, their actual real thoughts are going to be more helpful to you than pretend ratings.
It's true.
So each of you should have 5 people that have your back, that like you, that you trust, that will go, yes, I will do that the day it drops, or then it's really more the first week, but the first day, at least get a couple on there.
Yeah.
But have them ready. Let them know when it's happening. Make sure their account is good. Mm-hmm. Because get this, once you get to like 50 rating reviews, the Amazon algorithm kicks in and it'll start suggesting your programming to people. But you need 50 reviews first. And they'll probably up it soon to 100. So the more you get, like, you know how like you'll go on Amazon and they'll be like, maybe you would like this. The reason that they're doing that is that product has gotten enough attention to where it makes sense for them to push it. So you get right away. And so just in your friends, family group, just in people that are fellow creatives, you have enough people. You have at least 20 people. Make sure they are ready to go, because it will really, really change your experience on Amazon. That's just a thing I learned when I had something on there a while back. So hopefully that's helpful. I can't tell you how much that has helped people I know that have books or films, is to have people ready to watch it with the understanding that we don't know what they'll say.
Yeah.
And every time you're in a new group, every time you go to a party, you have your card and go, hey, do you like horror thriller? Great. I have a series. Would you want to rate it for me and just watch it? That'd be doing me a great favor. 9 times out of 10, people say yeah. Out of 10 people you ask, only 2 will do it. But get this, those 2 will matter so much.
Yeah.
So as soon as it's out, every time you're social, every bar, whatever it is, hey, I'm so and so. I have this here. I actually had cards printed up with the project on it, so that people could find it easier. And just keep asking people. So every social situation you go to, as soon as you all have that programming, is everyone at that party should be like, oh, yeah, we need to watch fucking Jade's that we need to do. She has a thing. Did you know that? Oh yeah. Don't be telling people about it. You can print up cards. They're really cheap at Vistaprint. It makes people more likely to do it. Cause you know, when you're at a party and someone says you have a show, you're like, you do not. Oh, yeah. You do. Damn, your show is cool. Have you seen this? She has a show. That will totally happen. And then everyone at that party now wants to watch your show. Because how often are people like, oh, I'm going to do a creative thing. You're like, no, I already did it.
Thank you. That lets us know that we...
So, Well, all right. Well, I hope that helps. I'm already drunk, so I'm going to go have a nap.
Damn. We got you there.
But yeah, I can't wait to see the show. Yeah, yes. So when it's up, contact me so I can watch it and say cool things about it and, you know, like it and do all this stuff.
Thank you. Awesome. And thank you for being
all right, ladies. Well, don't hesitate to get in touch.
Yeah. We will. Thank you.
Of course.
Awesome.
Yes. Thank you again.
Bye. Bye, guys.